Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Janet Booth, and I am speaking this afternoon on Sol-Lunar Threepeats, which is a term that I will explain shortly. This is the United Astrology Conference, May 17th, 2008. Welcome. Please, everyone, turn off your cell phones. And that probably reminds me that I didn't turn mine off, but I might have. We'll see. I don't usually get a call. Now, when I was flying here the other day, and actually my colleague Jacqueline James was on the same plane with me, and the pilot came on, and he said, "We're flying into 170-mile headwind, and it's amazing that we don't have a lot of turbulence." That got me thinking, because I thought, well, we're on spaceship Earth, and that is hurtling through space at quite a speed. Not only is it going around the sun that keeps us in its orbit, or in our orbit through gravity, but we're also rotating. That's a lot of movement. And when you consider the plates of the Earth and everything else, it's just amazing. It's a miracle that we don't have more earthquakes like that horrible big one we just had in China. And miraculously speaking, we also have kind of a miracle from our standpoint that the distance from the Earth to the Moon and the distance from the Earth to the Sun and their relative sizes are such that at certain times we get that perfect lineup and an eclipse. To me, that's one of the things that really proves the existence of maybe a cosmic clockmaker that set all of this in motion, but it certainly puts me in awe. And when I think about the Moon, it's very unique in that it is the only heavenly body that really we can measure truly geocentrically, because it is our satellite. It's also the only heavenly body that's visible during the daylight hours besides the Sun. And the Sun, of course, is our star, our spark of the Big Bang, and we're its satellite. So the Sun is moving, and our whole galaxy is moving, and here we drag our gravitational Moon along with us, and it's a lot of gravitational influence that it is miraculous that we have as smooth of a ride as we do. So I was thinking many years ago about the sort of Sun-Moon relationship and Sun-Moon-Earth relationship, and about how when we learn astrology and they talk to us about the lunation cycle, they always draw on the board like this. You know, we've got the conjunction 0 degrees apart, and then when the Sun and Moon are 90 degrees apart, we've got our opening square, and then when they're 180 degrees apart, we've got our opposition, which is the full Moon, and then when the Moon is 270 degrees past the Sun, we've got our closing square, the third quarter Moon, and comes back to a conjunction, and that's the new Moon. Well, that's a very static way of looking at the lunar cycle. And it's assuming that the Sun was standing still in that position. But actually, we know that that is not the case, and that if we have the Sun and the Moon at one particular point, and then the Moon starts going ahead of the Sun, but the Sun moves a little bit, so that by the time we have that first quarter square, the Sun has moved about 7 degrees. And by the time we've got the opposition, the Sun's moved about 15 degrees. And by the time we've got the third quarter square, the Sun's moved about 22-something degrees. And by the time the Moon comes back around, well, it hits that degree where we had the initial new Moon of this Moon cycle, but now it has to go another 20-something degrees to come catch up with the Sun at the next new Moon, which is about 29 degrees down the road, or beyond that in the zodiac from where we started. So that actually during a particular lunar cycle, the Moon is not moving 360 degrees, it's moving about 389 or 390 degrees. So I said, well, there's something going on with this. And I'm a big fan of retrogrades. I think that they are a wonderful opportunity for us to be able to have more than one chance at a particular aspect. And I always thought, what a shame it was that the sun and the moon didn't have a retrograde, because they're our most important heavenly bodies, the lights, and we only get one shot from them, or what? But when I realized this pattern, I said, well, in that 29-degree range, the lunation range, the moon goes through first in that first 2 days or so during the new moon phase. And then it comes back again at the balsamic phase in the last couple of days. And in between, the sun moves through that degree range. So I said, moon, sun, moon. Now we've got a threefold phenomenon. And I'm a big sports fan, so I adopted the word three-peat for that. And I like to write it like this. Moon, sun, moon. It looks almost like kind of the Hathor type of symbol, the circle in the middle with the two crescents on either side. I tried to do that on your handout, but Word wouldn't let me flip the moon crescent symbol in it. It was another hard story. But if a championship is repeated a second year in a row by a particular team, that's a repeat. And if they have three championships in a row, that's called a three-peat. So that's where I came up with the cute little name for this talk. And what we're going to be looking at is, what are the implications of this phenomenon? Well, one of the implications is, if we look at that aspect of the semi-sextile, which is particularly interesting, because if a planet is semi-sextile in new moon, if it's in the next higher sign of the zodiac, that means it's going to be very close to the next new moon.
No, say that again.
Okay. Say, for instance, right now, we had a new moon at 15 of Taurus. The next new moon is at 13 of Gemini. So if a planet was at about 14 of Gemini, so it's in a semi-sextile to the new moon of 15 Taurus, then the next new moon that happens is very close to, conjunct to that planet, if we're considering in a static world. Okay, so that's if you're comparing lunar cycles to a natal chart or an event chart. And I'm glad you brought that question up, Jackie, because I wanted to mention that when we're looking just on a transit-to-transit basis, you will have quick-moving planets entering or leaving that range between one new moon degree and the next new moon's degree. And in that case, you won't necessarily get a three-peat from sun, moon, sun. If it's a slow-moving outer planet, you can get that three-peat phenomenon. Okay, they might be the same aspect, maybe it's at a slightly different degree that it's occurring, but it's about the same degree. So if you have a planet even at 45 degrees to a new moon, what's going to happen is in the next lunar cycle, the sun will be at that degree at the full moon of that next lunar cycle. Okay. And that also makes me think, too, about how, you know, they don't draw Earth into the chart. Earth, we say, is across from the sun. And so that means when the moon is full, it's across from the sun. That means the moon is closest to the Earth in the chart. So that may be another reason why we experience that full moon phenomenon with such craziness. Who knows? Okay. So we have the idea that we can have semi-squares or semi-sextiles that are very important. And it might even be that because you have, in that case of something that might be semi-sextile to a new moon degree, it gets emphasized by the semi-sextile this month. Next month it's emphasized by the new moon with a conjunction. And the month after that it could be emphasized with a semi-sextile from the other side. So it's almost like it's had extra special attention for a while, somewhat similar to when a planet is on station, or a planet is aspected by a planet on station. So it kind of gave me a new appreciation for the importance of the semi-sextile. And one of the things that I like about retrogrades, and I think is also true with this three-peat phenomenon, is it gives us, like, when you're taught to how to teach, they say, tell them what you're going to tell them, then you tell them, then you tell them what you told them. I don't know if I did that today. But view, No, preview, view, review. So that might be part of what happens with a Sol-Lunar three-peat. And in thinking of Dane Rudyard's work on the lunation cycle, he talked a lot about the moon as representing seeding. It's the luminary of the night. It has to do with the subconscious. It has to do with the dark. So it comes first in the dark of the moon, and it plants the seed, or it starts something in motion. Then when the sun comes around, you're going to have almost what's like a full moon phenomenon. Because what is a full moon but the full reflection back to us of the sun's light? So the sun is the conscious principle. It's the realization or illumination. So the sun transit brings that flowering like a full moon would. And then the second time the moon comes through that range of the new moon, it's in the balsamic phase, which usually means breaking down or coming to completion. So the third visit, well, second visit by the moon, but it's the third when you consider the two lights as a team, will be sort of bringing matters to a conclusion or planting the seed for it to spiral to the next higher level. So it might connect to the next moon cycle. There is a handout in the back if you're interested. Okay, so this opportunity to preview, view, and review with our seeds. And you know, they also talk about the power of three. Not only is repetition something that aids learning, but in triangles, they have the three sides that gives a powerful structure, like the pyramids are constructed out of triangles. Or think about the Trinity, three in aspects, the trine, harmonizing principle, as opposed to that sort of polarity of two. Okay. So what we're going to be looking at today is thinking that, as I mentioned, with transits to transits, you don't always get a three-peat. But with transits to a fixed chart, you will. And there's sometimes when you're looking to a fixed point, like a chart, you can get six aspects from the sun and the moon in a given lunation cycle. And this is because it won't be the same aspect. There's only a 15-degree difference from a semi-square, which is 45 degrees, to either the semi-sextile, which is 30, or to the sextile, which is 60. There's only a 15-degree difference from the sesquiquadrate, which is 135, to either the trine, which is 120, or the quincunx, which is 150. So we've got a 29 to 30 degree movement in a lunation cycle. So it's possible sometimes for the sun and the moon to make one of those types of aspects to a given point in the chart and come along and make the other kind of aspect to a given point in a natal chart. So if that's happening, think how much attention is being paid to that particular planet during that particular moon cycle. And you're probably also going to have some attention from the prior moon cycle or the next moon cycle because of those sesquiquadrates and semi-squares and the, you know, 15 degrees off from a new moon is the full moon and that whole phenomenon. Okay. So I thought that even beats Pluto and Neptune, which can make five hits. Have you ever noticed that? The top end of one retrograde range interfaces with the bottom end of the next year's range. And so you'll have two retrogrades and three forward aspect repetitions. Only Neptune and Pluto is what I've found. Okay, now you can also take this concept into progressions, and we're going to look at that too. You know, one of the things about the transiting basis is I always like to see the sun crosses each one of your planets in your natal chart on a particular day, year after year. So it crosses your sun at your birthday, solar return. But the sun comes to your Venus every year. That's kind of like your Venus birthday. Comes to your ascendant or your descendant every year, or your midheaven. So you might want to look at those times in your life when the sun is crossing, say, your midheaven every year, and see if that's a very good time for you about career matters. And then if the lunar cycle matches up, so it's emphasizing that point three times during that time of the year, it's going to. When you have a new moon close to the time that the sun crosses that point, you're going to have the sun-moon three-peat. Now, the moon will make all kinds of aspects to a given point in a natal chart during a month, beyond the ones that the sun makes. But I'm thinking, and I haven't researched this, so this is kind of, that's what free speech is about, to throw out some of your ideas. But the idea here is that, I'm losing my train of thought. Oh yes, that time of year when you get that three-peat, that it's the sun aspect that really is the kicker of things. Just kind of like in a three-stage process with the retrograde, it's the retrograde pass, or the middle of the three passes, that is really the kind of turning point in the process. Okay, so I brought a number of charts for us to look at, and I think actually before I start going into the examples, I'm going to talk about just a moment what's on the handout about the ways that I think we could play with this phenomenon. So we might find that there are certain planets that get aspected last, like high-degree planets get a void of course moon aspected last very frequently. This may also happen a few lunar cycles in a row with the solar-lunar three-peats. I think one thing that will be very interesting to look at is everything is in motion. And when we look at a natal chart, it's like we've stopped the clock and we're not seeing the motion that came before that stopping of the clock or after that stopping of the clock. So when you're thinking in terms of your natal chart, you see, well, you have your moon and you know your phase of the moon that you were born in. But have you ever looked at what your new moon before birth was? And how was that phase important and the part of the phase you were born into, or the part of the cycle that you were born into? So there could be aspects that are getting sort of that sun-moon three-peat, or at least maybe two out of those three, during that moon cycle you were born into. And you want to look and see what were those, because those might be planets that are very important in your natal chart or in your life. And I think we're going to look at a few of those examples. Yes?
So that would highlight certain houses. I mean,
it could highlight houses.
And that may bring forward almost like a karmic aspect into your natal chart of what some of the lessons you're learning.
Yes, I would say so. That would be my guess. Some karmic lessons that you're learning are going to be highlighted by what's being particularly emphasized in that moon cycle.
And would you also use the degree that's highlighted?
Well, the new moon degree. The Sabian symbol would be great to look at, of the new moon degree.
Like if you're born like on a full moon, and then you have the new moon, you'd almost have that three-peat in between the two. Is that correct? Or am I not?
I'm not sure I understand your question,
you
but
the
moon came through that degree before you were born.
Okay.
Then it's opposite that degree, and the sun is at that degree when you're born. And there will be a balsamic repetition of that when you're about age 14 by your progressions.
Okay.
Right. Yes. And you might also like to look at, during that lunar cycle you're born into, what was the first aspect that the sun and the moon made during that cycle, and what's the last aspect that they made? Because my suspicion is you could perhaps interpret this as the first aspect is sort of like out of the gate. What's the first thing you're always trying to do in your life? And the last thing would be sort of, well, in the long run, at the end of the day, what does it come down to? And I believe you can probably also look at that first and last aspect concept for your subsequent progressed moon cycles. If you were born void of course, there was still a new moon before you were born, and it wouldn't have been void of course.
Right.
Sometimes
I thought you were saying that it would be the first aspect at birth. So
right.
If you're born during.
No, it's not necessarily at birth. I'm saying you go back to that new moon before your birth. What was the first aspect that the sun and moon were making to something else? And maybe that something else was your Mercury and it moved, and by the time you're born, it's somewhere else. But we're going to see an example of that when we do the overheads in a moment. So, if there are solar, lunar, three-peats on a transit basis, your progressions are just the transits of the days and weeks and months after you were born, right? Progressed sun is 1 degree for each day, or one, it translates to 1 degree for each year. So that's for how many, you know. Those lunar cycles after you were born turn into your own progressed lunar cycles as the decades go by in your life. And those are where I found the most fascinating examples, and we're going to see some of those very soon. Let's see. We talked about transits to the natal chart. Lunar returns. How many people here work with lunar returns? Most everybody. This is when the moon comes each month back to the degree it was at when you were born, and you can stop the clock and have a chart for that month, like a little mini one-month chart. So you know that there are 13 lunations in a solar calendar year, and there are only 8 moon phases. You know, we've got new and crescent, first quarter, gibbous, full, disseminating, third quarter, balsamic, like that. Have you ever sat and spread out like a whole year's lunar returns and looked at the moon phases? You will notice that the moon phases cycle backwards, new, balsamic, third quarter, disseminating, full, gibbous, first, crescent, new. And because there's only 8 types of moon phases and 13 lunations, there are usually half of the time during the year you have a repetition of the type of phase for 2 months in a row. So you might have 2 balsamics, then a third quarter, then maybe 2 disseminatings, 2 fulls, 2 gibbous, 1 first quarter, 2 crescents, 1 full, things like that. So that's very fun to look at. When the sun is transiting close to your moon, your lunar returns will always be either a new moon or a balsamic moon phase. They can't be anything but that. So those will be interesting to look at out of the whole year to see, when are you having your new moon phases of your lunar returns? When are you having your balsamics? And because the balsamics will precede the news, because they go backwards, you know there's certain things you'll need to finish up before you can move into some new things. But that almost has a retrograde feel to that, too. And the fact that you get repetitions of those reminds you of some of the retrograde stuff. So I said, even though the sun and moon don't go retrograde, they give us repeating phenomenon on a regular basis that we can learn to use to our own advantage. Okay, and then there's the idea of intentional three-peating, is what I called it, where you look at a coming moon cycle and you go, okay, I'm going to start XYZ in the new moon phase when I get this aspect to my natal chart from the moon, and I'm going to set it up so I'm going to do stage 2 when the sun comes and makes that aspect, and I'm going to set it up so I'm going to do stage 3 when the moon comes back around at the balsamic and repeats, three-peats that aspect. Now, have any of you heard of Jan Spiller's work with new moon wishes? Mm-hmm. Okay, so she says in that first 48 hours after the new moon, you sit down and you make out your 10 new moon wishes. I see myself easily able to, and you fill in your blank and you tie it all up at the end with all in a healthy and safe way. So you don't have to worry about watch out what you wish for. And you get to do 50 of them when it's the new moon in your 11th house of wishes and hopes. Well, you kind of add that same idea to intentional three-peating. If you have things that you're really trying to work on for your intentions or your affirmations or improving of your life with the new moon wishes, you can link that to actions you're going to take with the three-peat stages. So that's where I hope you'll find this is a helpful trick going forward in your life. So now let's take a little tour of what we have going on here. Yeah, I invented this little, you know, move the things around, sun and moon markers, just to kind of give us that feeling, whoops, I'm moving the sun too fast. You know, as the moon's going, the sun is also going, because it's never that static kind of situation. Okay, so for instance, we can look at, oops, yeah, let's get that right side up. These are aspects that the sun and moon are making in the current moon cycle right now. And we have a lot of squares to the nodes, to Chiron, to Neptune. First the moon did it, then we had the sun come through, and the moon will be back again. I only put Venus on this list because it's not far from the sun. It's also hitting many of these same aspects. And one thing I noticed was when the sun came through here around the 13th on the nodes, that's when that big earthquake was. But when you think about Chiron and Neptune, it can be suffering through injury. And then when the nodes come in, it can have a pretty wide effect. So I think that's one of the things that's going on. And we may see that when the moon comes through that degree range again around June 2nd or 3rd, maybe finally they will have said, you know, okay, we know what the full impact was of that earthquake, etc. Oh, I thought your hand was up for a question. That's okay. Now, one of the things I noticed when I took a 360-degree dial and I put a year or more's worth of new moon degrees on it. I just want to get a pointer here. I said, let me look for something that's on the world axis. And we had a solar eclipse at the summer solstice back in 01. So I pulled that out, and you know, here we go. Every 29 or so degrees, we get the next new moons. But when we come back about a year later, and that was a solar eclipse then on 6/10/02, there's about a 10-degree gap. So in that 10 degrees, you don't have, over the course of 2 years, you don't have those two new moons. Let's see. This early part, the first sort of 20-ish or 19 degrees of the 01s, moon cycle is also part of the moon cycle the next year, so it's getting a lot of attention. But there will be certain parts of a lunar cycle that, you know, don't get as much attention for 2 years in a row. But what we want to look at is the fun people's charts here. Okay. Now Jackie Slevin showed up, and she has just written a book about career success, and there was a nice excerpt of that in an article in the NCGR member letter. And even before I saw that article, I was looking at Carol King's chart, born February 9th, 1942, at 11:42 p.m. in Brooklyn, New York. And Jackie was particularly pointing out how Carol has a very tight sextile from Neptune, which is a major ruler of music, to her midheaven. And you call that a primary planet?
Principal
planet for her career. And that is absolutely true. But what makes this very interesting is when you do that looking at the new moon before birth, because in her chart it was at 26 of Capricorn. And that makes, at the time, of course, made a grand trine with the 26 Taurus Uranus and the 29 Virgo Neptune. So that's all really good. But when Carol's born, she gets born at the right time of day to have the midheaven fill that in and make it a kite. And even if you weren't looking at that new moon before birth, you would say, well, at least we see the trine between Uranus and Neptune. And we see that the midheaven is almost at the middle point of that and sextile to both points. So it's kind of making a triangle like this that is an inverse kite, or it's waiting to be kited just by anything that would fill in that bottom point. So if you're not going back and looking at the new moon before birth, you might miss something that's showing an additional piece of that cycle she's born into. That's almost like an invisible aspect, because it's a sensitized degree that's now very activated, but you wouldn't know it if you didn't go back and put it in. And one thing that I thought was very interesting was that the big time when she started getting all of her hits. Other people were singing them, but back around 61, 62 was when she really launched into her productive mode. I mean, she personally didn't make a big impact till Tapestry in 71. But in 62, she had her progressed sun was squaring her natal moon, which is her 10th house ruler. So, okay.
Well, 61 and 62, wasn't Saturn in Capricorn? Wouldn't that have come across this invisible
Very
point?
Good.
Very good. So, yep, Nancy just pointed out Saturn triggered this from the bottom of the chart and set off that invisible kite. And I love it because she has that song about do the locomotion. And I thought, you've got to put the chart in motion. You've got to look at the motion before the birth. You've got to look at the motion after the birth. And then you really start to get a feel as to what exciting things are happening. Let's see. Oh, she started playing the piano when she was about 4. It was at about 6 that the progressed moon squared her natal moon. And that was the first of a three-peat in that moon cycle, which she had a progressed new moon when she was 5, okay? So it kind of in that balsamic, the seed is starting to be planted. She's starting to play piano. Well, after you play for a couple of years, you probably are almost good enough people can listen to you without screeching. So 6, the first thing, the moon comes through. In 62, the sun makes that aspect. And then in 75, the moon three-peated that aspect, and at that point, she got back together with her first husband just for a writing partner. And she was doing her Thoroughbred album with also James Taylor and Crosby and Nash. So she had kind of hit her pinnacle. She was not only writing for other people, had hits on her own, but now she was collaborating with other big-name people. So I thought that was very interesting. So that's our Carole King and the new moon before birth. Now, we talked about how important it is with this progressed moon cycle. Here we have Saddam Hussein, born April 28, 1937 at 8:18 a.m. in Tikrit, Iraq. And he became president of Iraq in 1979, and in 1979 it was just following the eclipse new moon at 17 of Gemini, right? So that the progressed new moon, I mean the progressed moon in the new phase came and it hit his ascendant, and the date that he became president was July 16th, and the date that it hit his ascendant was July 26th, 10 days. Within 10 days of that aspect, he became the president. Then the sun came through that aspect and made the same conjunction, and that was in June of 88. And that was during something called the Anfal campaign, A-N-F-A-L, which was about a 2-year massive genocide that he perpetrated. I believe it was on the Turks, but it was on some people in Iraq.
No, I think that was the Kurds.
Kurds. I call them Turks, but that's Kurds. Well, we got the U and the R in there. And they're in the northern part near Turkey. But you're right. Thank you. It was the Kurds. He took over. Well, anyway, he started his presidency. Okay. Well, and that's probably a very good point. If he did not really legitimately do it, he kind of like grabbed it. It was a power grab. Okay. So what's interesting about this is that think of the karma. You grab power. Then you abuse the power. And I mean, he abused it just about better than anybody in modern history. And almost Shakespearean, well, we could argue that. Okay. But here's what fascinated me. Years later, in the balsamic phase of that cycle, the progressed moon comes back to the ascendant. On the 29th of December, 2006, anybody remember what was happening around then?
September
September what, 2006?
December 29th, 2006. He was hung the next day. The next day was his execution.
Wow.
Wow is right. So if the ascendant is how you greet the world and how you're known, he says, well, my big way is I grab power, I abuse power, and what is the karma of that? And the timing blew my mind when I looked at that. Very fascinating.
Very good example.
Good example. Yeah, even better than Carol King. Not bad. That's probably going to be my best one here. Okay. So, Shirley MacLaine, born April 24th, 1934, at 3:57 p.m. in Richmond, Virginia. And I want to find my notes. She was in high school and went to New York for a summer, was lucky enough to get cast in the chorus of a Broadway show for her summer job. I mean, who gets that?
She was a trained ballet dancer.
She was a very well-trained dancer, that's right. And, well, if I find my notes, great. If I don't, I may not. She went back at home, graduated from high school, and then she went back to New York and started as an understudy, and the person she was understudying for got injured, and it wasn't long before she was in the lead of that, in which time she was seen by a producer of films who put her into Hitchcock's The Trouble with Harry, for which she won a Golden Globe. Her first or second film out, she's winning a Golden Globe. But it was many years before she finally won an Oscar, which was for Terms of Endearment. Let's see. She had her progressed new moon December of 52. Okay, that Broadway role was 53, so it was during the new moon phase. Her understudy role was during the new moon phase in 54. The film that she won the Golden Globe for was in 55. All of this was during that new moon phase. When we got to the balsamic phase, by then she was starting to write her books. I think actually a little bit before that. Oh, she wrote her very first book was in the full moon of that phase. Okay. Well, one thing that I thought was fascinating, work with Sabian symbols. You brought that up about Sabian symbols. The Sabian symbol of that progressed new moon was 22 and change of Taurus, which is my favorite one, which is a jewelry shop filled with the most magnificent jewels. Mm-hmm. So it gives you that idea that she was going to have something wonderful happen to her that was going to bring her fortune in that moon cycle, and it certainly did. Now, midpoints are another thing you can look at with this, because what's interesting here is that that degree happens to be the midpoint between Mercury, ruler of her midheaven, and the midheaven. And I always think that the midpoint between the midheaven and its ruler, or the ascendant and its ruler, is a very sensitive point in your chart. So she has the new moon there. It's got a great Sabian symbol. Doesn't take her long out of the chute for bing, bang, boom. It is all fallen together for her. Then when we come to her next moon cycle, okay, that started in 82, up here in the ninth house. So the progressed moon came to her midheaven in 1983, and that's when she was working on Terms of Endearment that ended up being her Oscar-winning film. The sun progressed to that. Woo! Come back here. Okay. The sun progressed to the midheaven in 1991, around the time of her nomination for a Golden Globe for a Best Supporting Role. All of her other nominations had been for lead role, but this was in Postcards from the Edge. And then the final time that the moon will come back again in the balsamic phase is not until July 1st of 2010. So we want to wait a couple of years and see if something big and exciting in Carol's career doesn't happen for her at about that point in time, because I'm guessing yes. Shirley. Who did I say?
Carol.
Carol again. Shirley MacLaine. Thank you. These things happen. Okay. Now, we want to look at the chart of Billy Joel. He's one of my favorites. He's born May 9th, 1949, at 9:30 a.m. in Bronx, New York. And in his progressed moon cycle that started in 67, he was already playing in a band. He started in his first band in around 1963 to 64, and that was during the balsamic progressed cycle, kind of planting that seed for what was going to come up. And pretty much right off the bat in 68, he was making his very first album. It was with that band that he was with at the time. It wasn't solo. And let's see. In 68,
it wasn't solo.
It wasn't solo.
Isn't that interesting? That would have been in Gemini.
Gemini, correct. And the moon came across that Mercury in Gemini in January of 68. So that was the year that he was to come out with his first album. I don't know the months of that particularly. When the sun came through and progressed up to that Mercury was in 1971, and by then he was a headliner as a solo musician. Okay, and by the time we get to the balsamic phase, he was finishing up his pop writing career and getting into more classical. I think the classical stuff he started to do right about the time of his next progressed new moon, which was 1997. He still plays it, all of his pop music, mm-hmm. but as he hasn't composed anything since River of Dreams album. And that last song on the album is, "These are the last words I'll ever write," which is pretty telling. He may write something else again. Oh, yeah, he went in for alcohol rehab and things
cocaine
like that.
Yep.
But now one of the things that I found interesting about Billy is he never finished high school because he was working nights to help support his family after his father divorced his mother. And, you know, he's out playing in the band, so he had a lot of absenteeism, and they wouldn't give him his high school diploma. He has since been granted 4 honorary degrees from universities. Around 96, he started his college lecture tours. I saw him do one in Connecticut. And that was his way of trying to give back and connect to the educational community. You know, he would answer the kids' questions and then play a little music that would go with the questions and things like that. And that was also in the balsamic phase leading up to his new moon phase.
What was his next new moon?
His new moon of the current phase he's in was in 97. And during the new moon portion of that phase, he was given the American Music Awards Honor, or Award of Merit. I actually was lucky enough to go to that in Hollywood. And he was also inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that year. So I expect there's still going to be a lot more things going on, but this one is in his 12th house. He's a little bit more withdrawn back into his inner self, probably.
Yeah, where was the last one?
The next one after that will have to be in his first house, but he'll be pretty old. I mean, if this one that starts in the 12th house doesn't start till 2026. So the one he's in now has started in 97. These are 30-year cycles, 29 to 30-year cycles. So, you know, okay. I want to look at John Lennon. We talked about first aspect, last aspect. The first aspect that was made to John Lennon's chart in his first progressed lunation cycle, not the one that he was born into. Okay? Because see, here's where he's born. So this is after his birth. It was very close to this Mercury. It was like at 7 degrees of Scorpio, and his Mercury is 8. And for the purposes of recording, he's born October 9th, 1940 at 6:30 p.m. in Liverpool, England. So the very first aspect that it makes is the conjunction to Mercury. And the last aspect that the moon makes in that lunar cycle happens to be a trine from Sag, early Sag degrees, down to the Pluto. So if you think about, that was the main years that he became well-known, gave his message, and then was killed. He didn't even live out that whole moon cycle. But he was kind of a messenger. which is very mercurial. And he also did a lot of writing. He wrote poetry in addition to the lyrics. And he was also a very big pusher of change in the world. Like, he and Yoko had their peace love-ins, and, you know, he did a lot with different organizations against the war. I think he gave some honor back to the Queen because he was upset with Britain's policies and such like that.
He refused the knighthood.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what it was?
Oh, that could be. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So that was pretty interesting on first and last aspects. This is another one of uncanny timing. In the progressed moon cycle, when the moon opposed Saturn, which rules his midheaven, that was on May 9th of 1962. That very, very day, George Martin signed the Beatles onto their EPI label. Very interesting. When the sun became opposite Saturn was when he was running off to India to be with the Maharishi. That was a big kind of turning point in his life. And by the time the moon came through there again in the balsamic in 89, he was dead, but that was the year that the first major biography of him came out. Your transits and your progressions are still going on even after you die. Yep. Okay. I put Pablo Picasso in color. I couldn't bear to put him in black and white. Born October 25th, 1881 at 11:32 p.m. in Malaga, Spain. Hell of a 10th house there, huh? Four planets plus Chiron. And at his father was an art teacher. And at age 7, his father gave him his first serious formal training, and that was when his progressed sun was opposite his Saturn. Okay, sun is in the fourth, progresses up opposite Saturn. But the real important things about his art career were aspects to, of course, Neptune. So when the progressed moon opposed Neptune, it was 1907, which they said was a very pivotal year for him. The first time the progressed moon came over Neptune was 1894, and the biography I read for him said his real work as a painter is said to have begun around 1894. Now, they don't say that because they know it's something with Neptune. That's just a fact.
But his Neptune's on the cardinal axis.
His Neptune is on the cardinal axis. Very good, Jackie. So he became a very popular, well-known artist, although in the very early days he shared a loft with another artisan, and one worked by day and slept by night, and one did the opposite because they were so poor. Okay, so the sun comes across Neptune. No, the moon comes across Neptune. Moon comes across 1907. That was when his work changed from the sort of normal art to the getting towards the weird art. And let's see. Okay, his cubist phase began in 1909 when the progressed moon conjuncted. No, it must have been opposed. Opposed his natal moon. Wait a second. It's conjunct, right. So he had a progressed lunar return, 1909. The cubism is starting. The sun followed through very closely after that. He had two stages of cubism. One was called analytic and one was called synthetic. So those both happened with that progressed moon. And then when the progressed moon came by many years later, in 36, that was right about the time of that Spanish Civil War that gave the Guernica painting, which is one of his most famous, about the bombing by the Germans. Okay. So, we have only a couple minutes left here. Vladimir. A lot of interesting people were born right around me. I was born in October of 52. A week before me in September was Christopher Reeve. 6 days after was Vladimir Putin. Another week after that was Caroline Casey. So, Vladimir was born October 7th, 1952, 9:30 a.m. in St. Petersburg, Russia. And how do you like that Pluto conjunct the midheaven? Wow. Is this guy a little bit interested in power? And he made his mark in the KGB, which is a secret spy organization. And that Pluto...
I just want to see the date.
You want to see the date.
Thank you.
Okay. And that Pluto is very tightly square to Jupiter. Jupiter in the seventh oftentimes will indicate favorable connections, contacts, networking with people. So he was good buds with Boris Yeltsin. That's how he got his big move in politics, because here's what's interesting. He had during the balsamic phase of his first full progress moon cycle was when he left the KGB to get involved in politics. That was in 91. His new moon was January of 94. It was in the first house. Ah, the whole time he was in the KGB, it was a 12th house cycle for him. Perfect. Okay. So he gets into politics. He's elected a deputy mayor of his town. That's not that big of a position. But 7 years later, when it's the quarter moon, he joins Yeltsin's inner circle. Oh, no, 3 years later, joined Yeltsin's inner circle. And by 99, he became prime minister, then acting president, and in 2000, he was elected the president. Well, 2000 was only the first quarter moon of that progressed moon cycle. Now, here in 2008, it's his full moon, and he's just left the presidency, but only to step to the side, I think, because the law is required, and he's going to basically run the country now as the prime minister. But isn't it amazing? And the
His progressed
new moon was in January of 94.
When he started.
That's when he became a deputy mayor.
It's still power. He was still seeking power.
Oh, he's always seeking power. But I mean, his rise was meteoric. To go from a deputy mayor to all of a sudden you're the president in just a few years, and people say. I did not check the Sabian degree on that one. But, I mean, we talk about, oh, Barack hasn't had enough experience to be president. Or, like, how about this guy?
Yep, he became president then in 2000.
Yes, elected president in 2000, March of 2000. Okay, so we'll do one more little thing. The new moon before 9/11/01 occurred on August 18th, 2001, 10:55 p.m., and I placed it in Washington because that's the, you know, capital of our country. And I just like to look at, you know, what was the three-peated aspect during that moon phase, and it's involving this very tight opposition between Saturn and Pluto, which is shattering of structures, lots of destruction of buildings, also government. I mean, our whole way of life has started a long, slow, huge transition from that time forward.
Midheaven's on the cardinal axis.
And
22.5.
Oh, yes, if you use the minor aspects, it is a cardinal axis 22.5. Midheaven, as Jackie points out. So this moon first, then the sun, then the moon, all formed squares to this opposition axis. And actually, the full moon was a grand cross. Not exact, but the third quarter square was September 10th. Oh. So I think that's pretty close for this. So you want to watch your transiting moon cycles, especially you want to watch them to your own chart. You want to see if you can do some intentional three-peating. I have about 1 minute or two for a question, and then we have to clear the room out and make it nice. Anybody have any questions, or do you think you kind of understood what I was aiming at? And I really encourage you to play with this, and if you have any exciting stories that you discover from your own life or others that you would like to share, please email me at janetbooth@astrologybooth.com. And also, this lecture will be available on CD, orderable through my website. And also you can find in the bookstore my Janet's Planets Astrological Calendar that does show all the retrogrades, all the moons on a page. This is actually a downloadable one-page document on my website. And also, it